This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The world is falling behind in its efforts to achieve the Sustainable Development Goals. The global contestation for critical minerals is fueling geopolitical rivalry.
That was South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa telling the assembled leaders in Beijing that African nations are particularly affected by global affairs and changes. Details coming up also. A new program battles gender-based violence in East and Southern Africa, while tricycle operators in Ghana deal with road safety concerns. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The 2024 Summit of the Forum on China-Africa Cooperation, FOCAC, is underway in Beijing. Since the inception of FOCAC in 2000, China's economic ties with Africa have deepened significantly. However, China's deepening connections, and in particular its foreign direct investment in Africa, have been the subject of discussion regarding their composition, goals, nature, and implications for the continent's industrial and economic development. Paul Nanatulia, a research associate at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, is attending the forum. He spoke with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi about what China wants to achieve out of this gathering.
It's a big deal for China. It's a big opportunity for them to advertise their convening power. China is going to use every opportunity to demonstrate solidarity and support from the African continent, which, as defined by the Chinese state-owned media, is a region that has the largest number of developing countries, and that is key for China in the context of the intensifying rivalry between China and the United States in particular, but China and Western countries more broadly. So competition for the Global South and competition for Africa, which is the largest sector within the developing world, is key. One expects out of this summit, for instance, is a clear commitment to improving and strengthening diplomatic coordination between China and African countries over key international and multilateral issues. China is also trying to position itself as a preferred partner in different areas. One of the key issues that African delegates are going to be putting on the table is green growth, making the transition from hydroelectric power to wind, solar, geothermal, and that kind of thing. And China has an overcapacity of these technologies. So technology transfer in that sense, China is fully aware that African countries are working with Korea, Japan on green growth issues. And so China is going to use every opportunity to try and market itself as a preferred partner when it comes to these critical African priorities. Certainly, they're also going to discuss peace and security. African countries are definitely going to put Somalia on the table because, you know, there's a funding drawdown for ATMIS, for the mission that is out there in Somalia. And there's been a sense that African countries are going to try and see what they can get out of China in order to keep that mission going. China is also going to try to continue to market its Belt and Road program. It is true that China has been lending less in the area of infrastructure finance, but I think it's worth recalling that infrastructure finance is not the only activity of the Belt and Road program. The Belt and Road program has got five strategic pillars, of which infrastructure financing and regional connectivity is just one element. So China is going to try and continue to push that. I think we're likely to see China pushing as well the Global Security Initiative and the Global Development Initiative. These are new foreign policy concepts that China has articulated and which China definitely will want to push.
China, the world's number two economy and Africa's largest trading partner, with bilateral trade hitting $168 billion in the first half of this year, according to the Chinese state media. Beijing loans to African nations last year were their highest in 5 years, and top borrowers were Angola, Ethiopia, Egypt, Nigeria, and Kenya. What do you make of that?
I don't really look at this as a good news story for Africa, because it seems that African governments have tended to look at FOCAC more as a platform for getting more loan finance, as opposed to finding ways to work with a multitude of Chinese entities to see how proper trade can be enhanced. African economies need to move up the value chain, because it is true that China is the biggest trading partner of the African continent, but the nature of that trade is alarming to many, because 98% of what African countries are exporting into the Chinese market is raw materials, and these are being exchanged for manufactured processed goods. This is one of the reasons why African countries are running huge trade deficits with China. And President Cyril Ramaphosa of South Africa spoke very, very powerfully and passionately about this weakness of African countries. It would be impossible to reduce that trade deficit if the quality of African trade is not attended to, if African economies don't move up the value chain, and if African countries just continue to look at debt as a strategic lever for development. Yeah. And so the strategic position of African countries should be expanding trade, making the policy adjustments to shift from aid to trade. I think these should be the strategic issues that African countries should be discussing in Beijing.
That was Paul Nanatulia, a research associate at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies. He was speaking to VOA's Mohamed Al-Shenawi. At the summit, Chinese President Xi Jinping said his country would invest about $50 billion in African nations in the form of loans, aid, and direct investment. Xi said China would deepen industrial, agricultural, infrastructure, trade, and investment cooperation with the resource-rich continent. South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa told the assembled leaders that African nations are particularly affected by global affairs and changes.
Climate change is causing widespread devastation. The world is falling behind in its efforts to achieve the Sustainable Development Goals. The global contestation for critical minerals is fueling geopolitical rivalry. These challenges affect all nations, but are more often severely felt on the African continent.
Tanzanian President Samia Suluhu Hassan met with Xi yesterday and highlighted the importance of FOCAC in shaping China-Africa relations.
Your Excellency, I'm honored and privileged to meet with you once again. I still vividly remember the candid discussion we had on matters of mutual interest. And thank you for the FOCAC invitation. Indeed, this summit has continued to play a vital role in shaping China's Africa relations.
On the sidelines of the gathering, Zambia and China signed a memorandum of understanding on a revitalization project for the Tanzania-Zambia Railway Authority. Zambian President Hakainde Hichilema thanked Xi for the summit and the growing cooperation between the two countries.
Thank you very much, President Xi Jinping. I want to thank yourself, the government, and the people of China, the Republic of China, for the warm welcome yet again. We've been to two provinces before coming here, and we were well received there. Africa needs to come of age and learning the lessons of China. We also understand the importance of China in maintaining or assuring global peace, stability, and security. To minimize conflicts in the world, we're looking forward to our full cooperation in the FOCAC meeting that commences tomorrow.
You can find more about the China-Africa Summit on voaafrica.com and all our social media platforms. A quarter of women aged between 20 and 24 years in sub-Saharan Africa have been physically, sexually, and psychologically abused, the World Health Organization estimates. Now, a regional campaign supported by the UN Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization to create awareness about gender-based violence at universities is gaining momentum. From the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports.
Launched in March this year, the campaign, dubbed Safer Campuses, seeks to end violence against women in higher education institutions in East and Southern Africa. Remy Shawa is a senior program officer at UNESCO's Regional Office for Southern Africa.
Now that we have high incidences of gender-based violence and other forms of violence among students in higher education and tertiary institutions. In fact, one in four young women aged 20 to 24 years old in sub-Saharan Africa have been physically, sexually, or psychologically abused by a partner.
The campaign has been running in six African countries, including Zambia, Zimbabwe, Kenya, Tanzania, Namibia, and Uganda. Tinashe Chitunhu works with a non-governmental organization in Zimbabwe called Musasa that focuses on ending violence against women in the Southern African country.
In regards to violence against students at tertiary institutions, the trends that we have noted is that girls and boys at varsity experience similar forms of violence, which include psychological abuse. Other students can comment on a student's appearance. It can be sexually or meant to discredit one in a sexual manner or even in a suggestive manner.
The initiative aims to shatter the silence surrounding violence against women and girls on campuses across East and Southern Africa. Young women in East and Southern Africa are particularly vulnerable to gender-based violence, often having experienced one or multiple incidents before reaching higher education institutions. Alberta Wambua is the executive director of Gender Violence Recovery Center, a Kenyan-based charitable trust providing free comprehensive medical treatment to survivors of sexual and gender-based violence.
From April 2023 to March 2024, the center provided medical treatment and psychosocial support and access to justice to 3,749 survivors of gender-based violence. In that same period, we had 228 survivors of gender-based violence from higher education institutes of learning.
This occurs within a global context where one in three women has encountered sexual or physical abuse at least once in their lifetime. UNESCO says the campaign will use various elements and channels to encourage students to break the silence and take action against all forms of gender-based violence. Remy Shawa explains.
But despite all these high numbers, we know that there could be more as reporting is low. Cultural and societal behavioral norms can make gender-based violence to be acceptable or endorsed or tolerated, and it can make it difficult for survivors to report and to seek justice. And additionally, there is that stigma that comes with gender-based violence.
The Safer Campuses campaign aims at engaging all tertiary education players, including government ministries, administrators, parents, and students, to act and work towards ending all forms of violence against women and girls by breaking the silence on this disturbing issue. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
The athletic world is expressing shock at news that Ugandan Olympic athlete Rebecca Cheptegei has died at a Kenyan hospital after suffering severe burns over 80% in an attack by a former partner. A spokesperson at Maui Teaching and Referral Hospital in Eldoret City confirmed Cheptegei's death today. The 33-year-old Cheptegei competed in the women's marathon at the Paris Olympic last month. She finished in 44th place. Her father, Joseph Cheptegei, told journalists at the hospital that he had lost a daughter who was very supportive and hopes to get justice. Police officials say Dixon Ndiema poured gasoline on her and set her ablaze Sunday. Ndiema also was burned and was being treated at the same hospital. In 2023, Ugandan Olympic runner and steeplechaser Benjamin Kiplagat was found dead with stab wounds. In 2022, Kenyan-born Barney athlete Damaris Muti was found dead and apparently had been strangled. In 2021, long-distance runner Agnes Tirop was stabbed to death at her home. Her husband was arrested and charged with murder. The case is still ongoing. You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There, you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. I'm your host, Yehia Suhib, in Washington. And we'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1 202 258 3076. +1 202 258 3076. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing our listeners' comments on African News Tonight. Ukraine faces widely different prospects under a potential Donald Trump or Kamala Harris U.S. presidency. But as their campaigns race to the finish line, neither candidate has laid out exactly how they plan to deal with Russia's war on Ukraine. Experts say in recent weeks, the battlefield in Ukraine has itself radically changed, giving more power to Ukraine in determining its own fate. VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell reports from Washington.
Ukraine's ancient capital knows well what it's like to be tossed about by the waves and whims of powerful forces. And so analysts there seem ambivalent to a possible second term for former President Donald Trump. Alexei Melnik is with the Foreign Relations and International Security Program at the Razumkov think tank.
There is a prevailing opinion that the return of Trump to the White House is not the best scenario for Ukraine, although there are also cautious opinions that everything may not be that bad.
Trump has said he will swiftly end the war, though his running mate, J.D. Vance, once said he doesn't really care about Ukraine, leaving Ukrainians unsure what to think. This makes a potential Kamala Harris presidency more of a wild card to this nation that knows Trump and President Joe Biden so well. Harris has met with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and represented Biden at major transatlantic security summits. But on the trail, Harris has only briefly spotlighted Ukraine and how she differs from Trump.
He encouraged Putin to invade our allies, said Russia could, quote, do whatever the hell they want. 5 days before Russia attacked Ukraine, I met with President Zelensky to warn him about Russia's plan to invade. I helped mobilize a global response, over 50 countries, to defend against Putin's aggression. And as president, I will stand strong with Ukraine and our NATO allies.
Analysts say Harris is likely to follow Biden's support Ukraine playbook. And Trump's broad foreign policy pronouncements remain as vague as ever. Take Trump's promise that he will end the war in one day. Andrew Payne is a lecturer in foreign policy and security at City St. George's, University of London.
It's not entirely clear how he'll do that. The fear, of course, is that he'll do it by simply abandoning Ukraine, cutting off funds and pressuring Zelensky into negotiations at a time when Putin would enjoy all of the bargaining leverage.
But he says the battlefield has shifted with Ukrainian forces' recent decision to strike across the border and take a bite of Russian territory. While analysts widely predict that Ukraine will neither seek nor succeed in holding this land, it's a bargaining chip that will help Kyiv whoever wins. And he said Biden could also put his hand on the scale at a pivotal stage.
I wouldn't be expecting any shift in the U.S. position vis-a-vis Ukraine's military operations before November. But I would be watching between November and January, whatever the outcome, to see if there is a little bit more leash given to Kyiv.
And he notes Ukraine's leader has bolstered his relationships with European leaders and broadened his support. And so, as these two race to the end of this story, what could end up happening in Ukraine ultimately may not be up to the American president, whoever she or he is. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
A road safety report says motorized tricycles are linked to the most fatalities on the roads in Ghanaian city of Kumasi. Many motorists say tricycle drivers disregard basic traffic regulations. Still, the demand for their services keeps them on the roads. VOA's Mokpilia Baro has the story, reported by Edmund Agiye Kumi in Kumasi, Ghana.
Sofalen to Abukwa Road is the deadliest road in the Ghanaian city of Kumasi, averaging 3.6 deaths per kilometer. A study by the Bloomberg Philanthropies Global Initiative for Road Safety and Partners says sports utility vehicles cause the most crashes on this road. However, motorcycles and commercial tricycles record the most fatalities, 22% of all deaths on the road. Kenneth Akutsi is one of the thousands of motorized tricycle operators in Kumasi. He has been driving a commercial motorized tricycle for nearly 5 years, helping workers and students commute along the Sofalen to Abukwa Road.
Operating a vehicle like this on the road is a tricky issue. Most drivers with bigger vehicles always want to bully, and if you allow them, you'll be the one to suffer. However, because of the small size of this vehicle, we are able to maneuver our ways and enter places they cannot enter. So the customers like us more.
Akutusi says he's known operators who have died on the road and says there are many unlicensed drivers. But he says he stays safe because he's experienced and can anticipate what big cars will do. Many car drivers think motorized tricycles are dangerous because they move unpredictably. In 2023, the Kumasi Metropolitan Assembly banned them in the Central Business District. Al-Hassan Sidi, public relations officer of the Tricycle Riders Union, thinks tricycle drivers are not solely responsible for accidents.
When you come into the system, you see now we are many, and some of our drivers are indisciplined, and we alone cannot find the indiscipline in our people. We need the law enforcement authority. So we propose, like, we want to work hand in hand with the police. And they say no, that is their duty. And whenever they are ready to go with their duty, they don't need our assistance.
VOA reached out to the police, but they declined to comment. Mark Tony Mever is an urban mobility analyst with the World Resources Institute, who has studied traffic accidents and fatalities on the Sofalen Abukwa Road.
Speed is a significant risk factor when it comes to road safety. It actually influences the likelihood of a crash happening and the severity of injuries in an event where the crash actually occurs. In the context of Kumasi, about 85% of our road fatalities have been associated with speeding, and significant of these fatalities have been among the vulnerable road users. Vulnerable road users are a group of people who stand a greater risk of fatality or serious injuries in an event of a road crash. And one of these groups is the motorcyclist group, who have actually been on the rise since 2017. Presently, they actually represent 22% of fatalities within the city and 25% of serious injuries within the city.
Despite the dangers, tricycles remain popular. Restaurant owner Esther Nyarko is one of Akutsi's customers.
The tricycles are cheaper compared to the taxis. They also get here faster, especially when there is traffic congestion. If I take a taxi every day, I'll run at a loss. Also, Kenneth is very helpful and honest. I forgot my cell phone in his tricycle once, and he brought it back to me.
Many taxi drivers despise the tricycles and want them banned from the entire city.
How these tricycles behave on the road is very bad. They can cross you anytime, anyhow, regardless of which lane you are in. Whenever the green light is on, they want to overtake you, so they squeeze right in front of you. I almost ran over one of them last week on this very road. I think they should be made to operate in small towns, not cities like Kumasi.
Akutusi says he and his fellow tricycle drivers have no choice but to continue risking their lives on the road until there are new laws to improve safety. I'm Mukbil Yabaro for Edmund Agyeye Kumi, VOA News, Kumasi, Ghana.
And on behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Shogun Chung, thanks for listening to Africa News Tonight.